Hello, and welcome to the Epic Echo Media Musings. In this podcast, we'll look at the movies and TV shows you know and love, and the things in them that we don't love so much. We'll shed our insight on the problematic pieces of the media we consume while giving you tips to use those pieces to start great conversations. The point of our podcast isn't that you stop watching your favorite shows and movies, but instead to help you use them to start empowering conversations with the folks you watch them with. Enjoy. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of our mini podcast series, Media Musings. Today's episode is going to be focused on a movie that is a household classic and has been for decades, Grease. February was Teen Dating Violence Awareness and Prevention Month, and while the relationship between Danny and Sandy might not be violent, we can use it to talk about empowerment, respect, and self-worth, which are all factors that can help prevent teen dating violence and continue that conversation all year long. Grease was released on June 16, 1978, although the original musical was released a few years earlier in 1972. The plot of the movie musical is described as, good girl Sandy Olson and greaser Danny Zuko fell in love over the summer. When they unexpectedly discover they're now in the same high school, will they be able to rekindle that romance? The movie's most noteworthy stars being, of course, John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John, who play Danny and Sandy. The movie's genre is described as a romantic comedy musical, and the movie is rated PG with a suggested TV rating of TV-14 for sexual content, mild violence, smoking, drinking, and language. The movie grossed $8 million on its opening weekend in the U.S. and Canada and would go on to gross $396 million worldwide. The soundtrack would land 4 singles in the Billboard Top 10 and sell 13 million copies in its first year alone, going on to become one of the top-selling soundtracks ever created. It's still in the top 10 as of 2016 data. The film would remain the highest-grossing movie musical of all time until it was eclipsed by Mamma Mia in 2008, and the stage musical has had 123,000 different productions performed around the world. So based on its immense popularity, it seemed pretty fitting that we would have a discussion about it today for the podcast. You all know me, and I am joined today by one of my coworkers here at Epic, Melanie Kozak. I'm going to let her introduce herself, and then we are going to get right into the grease.
Hey, Nora. Thanks for having me. I am so glad that we're talking about this film because it's one of those movies that you watch when you're younger or you listen to the soundtrack and things don't resonate with you until you listen to it or watch it later on. So I'm just really excited to talk about that with you.
Yeah, I definitely don't think I've ever met someone who's never seen Grease or at least hasn't heard one of the songs. I mean, Grease Lightning is one of the best known musical songs that I think everyone knows. So it's really, really popular. It spans generations. I think while it came out in the 70s, it's set in the 50s. So folks resonated with it because it came out when they were younger, because it was based on the time that they lived in through high school. It just spanned generations from the moment that it was created. And I think that it has stood the test of time. I know that Fox Network did a live production of it just a couple of years ago when I was in high school. So it continues to be kind of brought back to the forefront of pop culture. And I think that that means we've got to overanalyze it. We've got to get into those issues. And we have to discuss them if we're going to keep this movie around like it seems we will.
Absolutely.
So I know we both are very familiar with the movie. I think most folks are. And I know the first time I watched it, I was pretty young. I knew the soundtrack, obviously, like most kids do. It's kind of the first musical I really remember being introduced to. My parents were born in the 80s. They both loved it. So as far as that all goes, my first perceptions of the movie were just, wow, this is so fun. I love it. And then I think even as young as middle school, I would say I started to get a little bit uneasy with some of the scenes. And then obviously going back and watching it as an adult, there's definitely some red flag moments. And then I've even come around to kind of like not liking parts of it and then come all the way full circle back around to being like, you know what, that kind of does stand up. So that's kind of my general takeaway. Is there anything generally before we kind of pick it apart that you'd like to add?
No, I think my general takeaway is like pretty identical to yours. I remember watching it when I was younger and just thinking it was really fun, you know, wanting to learn the lyrics of the songs. When I was younger, we went to like sock hops and, you know, dress like the characters. And then I probably didn't watch it again until maybe like college or late high school. And was getting those same feelings of like, oh, wait, some of this is not okay. And then watching it like later on in my adulthood, there's definitely some parts of it that definitely give me a little bit of the cringes, but also, again, some parts that I didn't recognize earlier, as something that was actually empowering that I took away from it when I was older.
Yeah, I you nailed it. I couldn't agree more. We all know some of the kind of like most blatantly obvious problematic pieces, I think, at this point, when we're talking about one of the first songs, maybe even the first song I think we get in the movie
I
Summer
think I know where you're
Nights.
going with this.
When we listen to Summer Nights, and I think it's just a couple of lines in, we're maybe 10 minutes into the movie at this point, and we have Danny telling his friends, the T-Birds, about how he met this girl and she was super cool and they had this summer romance. And the first question that the boys have for him is, did she put up a fight? And of course, it's not posed in like a way that's, did everything go okay, Danny? Like, did you get consent, Danny? It's more of like a, did you get what you came for, Danny? So the T-Birds are not going to be the saving grace of this movie.
No, they're not, are
No, the
they?
T-Birds definitely give us some problematic material to work with. They're still obviously kind of in pop culture, I think, this idealized version of like a man who works on cars and they're kind of like rough and tumble. But there's a lot that we should look into, I think, when it comes to the way their masculinity is treated, the way obviously that they interact with all of the women in this movie, specifically, obviously, when we think about Rizzo and the just intense amount of slut shaming that we see Rizzo have to go through in this
So much.
movie, where they see, we kind of have this, which is one of my favorite like dichotomies to have in a movie, specifically because it's so fun to analyze. But we kind of have this Marilyn and Jackie conflict going on. We have the Sandy, who's the good girl, has herself together, clean pressed blouses, like curled hair. She just always looks perfect and pristine. And she's the good girl who doesn't drink, doesn't smoke, as the song
She's like the
says.
symbol of quote unquote virginity,
Purity, absolutely.
purity.
And then we've got on her opposite side, we've got Rizzo, who is kind of seen as the one who gets around. All of the guys know that they could get with her if they wanted to. So she's just kind of seen as not worth as much as Sandy from the get-go. And I think that that's intentional. Again, this Marilyn Monroe, Jackie Kennedy conflict is really, really popular, and it's used to pin women against each other all the time.
I definitely think it's intentional.
Yeah, absolutely. They kind of are giving us an option, even as young as we were when we started watching it, as like, who are you? Are you a Sandy or are you a Rizzo?
Absolutely.
And we do see a little bit of character growth in this movie, not as much as in some other movies where we have some of these problematic pieces, but we'll get into kind of a little bit of how the character development changes that dynamic a little bit in the movie. But while we're on the subject of Rizzo, Rizzo has not a lot going for her when the movie begins. She is dating one of the T-Birds, but they don't really seem to be super happy. I think it's more of just a convenience type of situation, it
Yeah, I
seems
felt that
like.
too.
Yeah. And she has a bit of a pregnancy scare, which she gets a lot of shame for from both the girls and the guys in the movie. Folks look down on her because she didn't use protection, because she had sex in the first place. But at the same time, one of those things we were talking about that kind of came full circle for me is Rizzo's character is really sexually empowered for a movie that came out in the 70s and was written about the 50s. Although she obviously receives a lot of backlash for it, I do still think it's worth noting that she owns her sexual
She
power.
really does. And she like has that aura of like just knowing who she is, which again, just like you said, that's something that I didn't take away from it when I was younger. And then definitely when I watched it when I was older, I really love that aspect of her character.
Her song, There Are Worse Things I Could Do, is one of my favorite songs in a musical ever. It's her moment where she kind of gets to own her truth and say, I know what they think about me, but that's not who I am. I am this person who's also vulnerable, and I do care what they're saying about me, and I do want someone to respect me. And I mean, she truly is a very well-rounded character, who I think, if she were an actual person, I would have so much respect for. So Rizzo, for me as an adult now, is the saving grace of this movie. She's who I look to. She's who I want to watch. And things kind of do work out a little bit better for her in the end. Her pregnancy scare ends up being not something that she has to deal with. She's not pregnant. And her and Kaneki, I think, kind of just sail off literally into the sunset on the Ferris yes. wheel. So I do love that she gets a little bit of that like relief at the end. But through the entire movie, all of the girls, I think the girls, honestly, more than the guys, I would even say, look down on her for the way that she is. And Sandy and Rizzo have this conflict because they're trying to portray two different types of people. And Sandy, I would say, in the beginning is more of the target of it. You know, Rizzo has the whole song, "Look at me, I'm Sandra D," and they kind of make fun of her a little bit. But I would honestly even say that that probably comes as a defense tactic because yeah. Rizzo probably hasn't been treated great by those type of people in the past.
Absolutely.
So if we can read a little bit too far into Rizzo's character there, I think that's what I would say is going on.
I don't think
on.
It's too far. I agree with everything you said.
So as far as the rest of the Pink Ladies go, when we're thinking about problematic pieces, the next Pink Lady that I think doesn't get the fairest of treatment, well, actually none of the Pink Ladies really do. I'm blanking on the name. Patty, right? No, Patty's not one of the Pink Ladies. The slightly not as skinny Pink Lady that's kind of received as the joke. Most yeah. of the time, she doesn't really actually get, I mean, I don't even know her name. That should tell you kind of how much screen time and development she gets as a character. She's honestly just there to be like, ha ha ha, all the rest of them are interested in boys and she just wants to eat, which is obviously super offensive. And that is another archetype that women have to kind of deal with in media a lot of the time. It's like, well, if they're not attracted to me, I'm just going to do everything in my power to make myself less attractive and not even have to deal with it. Kind of thing.
It's a very weird trope that keeps getting perpetuated.
Right. And clearly it's been around for decades. So I think that character is definitely just a throwaway used to be the butt of a lot of these jokes.
Yeah.
Which is obviously very offensive. And then we also have Marty, who is being hit on by grown men, who even I think says at one point that she has like a thing for older men, which might be perfectly normal if this were Marty 10 years down the line. But as it stands, Marty is at most expected to be 18.
At most.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And I don't think we're supposed to assume that they're 18.
No, they're still in high school.
Right.
Yeah.
They're getting cars. It seems more like a 16, 17 group of friends. But she is openly hit on by a full-grown adult man during the dance scene. Very, very inappropriately. None of the teachers are alarmed by that.
No.
None of the students are alarmed by that. She also is in contact with a Marine, who, although we don't know the age of this person based on the fact that he's like sending her gifts and that he's deployed, we can kind of assume that he's a little bit older than she is. So depending on that age group or age gap, that's also super inappropriate. How is she kind of meeting these men? It's all very alarming for Marty's
but
character.
It's also like portrayed as like a joke. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, we're supposed to laugh at the fact that she's getting hit on by older men,
right.
Or laugh at the fact that she has all these pictures of Marines. It's supposed to be
or
funny.
Or be envious of her, even, almost.
Yeah.
Like, oh, she's getting all this attention. She doesn't have to deal with high school boys.
Yeah.
As if that's something to kind of aspire to. Which
or just
definitely
an entire isn't. Personality.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But instead of, you know, being funny, maybe we should be like, oh, that's not grooming.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, I mean, we don't know the age of this Marine, but if he's sending her gifts and things like that, and she's never even met him, I mean, that's textbook grooming for when he gets back to the United
yeah.
States. And she even says she intends on meeting up with him. So, I mean, nowadays we would see that a lot differently because of like internet dating and things like that, that have kind of made us more cautious, but it's the same concept, just formatted a couple of decades back.
It probably didn't help also that a lot of the actors and actresses weren't played by people high school age.
Absolutely.
But these are high school characters. Like, we have to remember, they're like 16, 17, maybe 18.
Yeah, exactly. Although you are correct in that it does take you out of it a little bit that the actors are in their 30s and 40s
yes.
for a large part of this movie. That's definitely very different. And for folks who maybe want a slightly different version of that, the Fox cast was slightly younger. However, obviously still all adults. But it was interesting to kind of see them in that different light, a little bit younger. And then also in the Fox, the live show that they did, we also got some characters of color, which is absolutely not present.
Oh my gosh, no, it wasn't.
In the original motion picture. There, I believe, and I even tried to go back and watch it, I believe there may be two Black students that attend Rydell High that we catch a glimpse of in the background of the dance scene.
Yeah.
But apart from that, completely whitewashed yeah. school.
Yeah.
There are zero students that are Black, or I don't even think that there are any students of color, period, that I recall. So that is one other good piece that comes with kind of these adaptations that are being done constantly, is we do get to see some of those boundaries pushed and some of those things changed. Other pink ladies, while we're still on the subject, I do think another saving grace for the film is Frenchie. We do get to see Frenchie, who is a high schooler in the 50s when the movie is set, who is trying to decide what career she wants. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
She knows she has options. She just doesn't know what she wants to do. It does come in a dreamscape way where a grown adult man is telling her to go to beauty school or not. But it is a really empowering scene, I think, for Frenchie to get to have those options. And I think that that's a really great depiction of an actual teenager, which a lot of these other things kind of seem a little bit more extreme and chaotic.
Yeah, especially coming from like a female teenager.
Yeah, exactly.
Where I think it was kind of cool that they were talking about like her future, her career, her education.
Yeah, and she gets to have one. She's not just caught up in these relationships or exactly. this pregnancy scare. She actually is kind of like scoping out her options, which I think is really great and worth noting. All right, let's see. Let me shuffle my notes around here. I think, yeah. I mean, Danny Zuko. Let me just put that out there. Danny Zuko is not my favorite man. He kind of... Well, when we first meet Danny Zuko, not only is he kind of like talking up his relationship, what he did with Sandy, he even kind of, from the way that Sandy portrays it, he lies about what he did with Sandy. So he kind of implies that he went all the way with Sandy, whereas Sandy says, no, we didn't do that. So immediately he's kind of trying to tarnish her reputation to build his in this classic kind of like macho male persona way.
I think that's such a good point as far as like the way masculinity is portrayed in the movie.
Yeah.
Is like, don't like have like genuine connections with women, you know, don't have feelings for them. Don't take things slow because that's not masculine enough.
Right. Even though in Sandy's telling of the story and in the little clips and things that we get, we see Danny being vulnerable. Mm-hmm. He's wearing a sweater. I mean, he is like a completely different person than the Danny Zuko we meet at Rydell High when he's back with his friends, which is, you're absolutely right. It is a great depiction of the way masculinity is treated in this movie. They all are working on cars. And although another saving grace, I will say, the person who taught them all to work on cars is a woman, which is another thing that I think is great. And one thing that a lot of like critics who say that the movie isn't a great representation have kind of also cited as being like, well, you can say what you will, but they did also give us this representation as well. Mrs. Murdoch was a great character who was kind of a powerhouse.
Absolutely.
I wish that she would have talked to the boys a little bit more about their masculinity issues, but, you know, we can't all be perfect. So back to Danny. He's got this macho persona. He definitely feels like he has to keep up in front of his friends. He even goes to Sandy a couple of times and tries to, like, talk to her on his own, and she isn't really interested because of what he's done in public. And, you know, Sandy is not really too fond of being embarrassed. I mean, who would be? But they do give each other a chance again. They go to the drive-in, and that is when we get the kiss scene where Danny just absolutely forces himself on Sandy, which you can say what you will. A lot of folks, which I completely agree with, a lot of folks when it comes to criticizing this movie will say it's just meant to be fun. It's just an old movie. Like, there's a lot of things that we can say about the movie and the things in it that just maybe haven't aged well. But as far as I can tell, non-consensual. It's a kiss, and then he also gropes her. That's never been okay.
No.
And we can't use the date that this movie came out on to excuse that. That's something we still have to talk about. Even if you watch and love the movie, we have to address that that was non-consensual and that that's not okay.
Yeah, it's definitely not okay. And to like combat those remarks of, well, it's supposed to be funny. I don't think that a lack of consent is ever.
Exactly.
Or should ever be, you know, be like, oh, let's have this be a joke. You know,
exactly.
It's very uncomfortable, that scene in particular.
Yeah. And then we immediately transition into Danny kind of being vulnerable. We're supposed to, I think, empathize with him because he sings his song, stranded at the drive-in. Absolutely. And he's like, can't you see that I'm in misery? Like, he's so torn up over the fact that she refused his kiss, even though she had given no consent, no physical indication that she wanted that. She just was watching the movie and he absolutely groped her.
Yeah.
So then he's, of course, heartbroken. We have to see him reconcile with the fact that he's been turned down, because how dare you turn down a T-Bird? And then begins the transition where we're supposed to think that Danny is growing and he's going to change a little bit about himself to be better for Sandy. But he doesn't have to work as hard as Sandy does.
No, I think he puts on a Letterman jacket.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's all he does.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
He tries to be like this softer side that he thinks that Sandy wants, when I would argue that Sandy probably just wanted to give her consent before you kissed her. And that would have solved a lot of the issue in the first place.
I think you're onto something.
Yeah. Sandy, I think Danny is, we're supposed to see him as like projecting those issues onto himself almost, like, well, I'm not good enough for Sandy and that's why she doesn't want to be with me. But I don't think that Sandy ever gave that indication.
No.
I think that Sandy just wanted someone who was nice and respectful, and that's not what Danny was. So he kind of just pretends to be.
Yep.
At the end. Whereas Sandy has to undergo this full transformation and change everything about herself to get Danny to give her another shot. So there's definitely a double standard there as far as between the boys and the girls. The boys are kind of expected to do as they please, and the girls are expected to do as they should, or as they're told, kind of, is the vibe that it gives. All right, what else do we have here? Take a look back at my notes. There is another scene at the beginning that is, again, absolutely non-consensual, absolutely not okay, where a lot of folks, it goes unnoticed. There's a T-Bird, they're out on the bleachers, mm-hmm. And he kind of like slides his way underneath of two girls wearing skirts, and then is looking up and laughing as his friends are like looking on and pointing, which again, we can't have this conversation without bringing that up. That's absolutely non-consensual. And yeah, it's just so gross.
That's something that I definitely didn't notice for the first couple of times. And it took until like the most recent time I watched it to realize that, like you said, it goes unnoticed, mm-hmm. but it is definitely really non-consensual and very creepy.
Yeah. And again, it gives that whole like macho masculinity vibe of like, if I want to look, I'm going to look, and there's nothing you can do about it, which is absolutely not okay. And those are the conversations that we need to be having as we're letting, I mean, I probably watched this movie as young as 6 years old. And those are the conversations that you have to start young about what did you see? How did that make you feel? What would you have done if you had seen that? Kind of like those conversations that you can start really early for these uncomfortable subjects, as the non-consensual touching. Again, that's something that you can have conversations about starting really early on, as most folks watch this movie, I think, pretty young.
I completely agree. I do want to go back to the transformations we were talking about, because there's just a conversation that I hear all the time, and I still go back and forth on it, but people talk about the transformation that Sandy goes through, and how, you know, like we talked about, it's like someone changing their entire personality for somebody. Mm-hmm. But then I've also heard the argument that's like, oh, she's embracing her sexuality and it's an empowering moment.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just something I wanted to get your opinion on.
Actually, I think Olivia Newton-John herself, even before she passed, had spoken out about that and how she felt that it was an empowering role, which I think is worth noting. And I think that as adults, like from my adult perspective, I absolutely understand where that's coming from. I think that that can be seen as a symbol of her being like, well, like Danny or no Danny, I'm just gonna wear this sexy outfit and go to the school fair. But then I also think we have to remember again that we're not all watching this with an adult brain. So I think that when I was younger, I obviously had no perception of what sexual empowerment really looked like. So to me, it felt like Sandy was changing to fit in with Danny.
I 100% agree. When I was younger, it was the same thing. It's like, oh, this is what a woman would have to do in order to get the attention of the one that they want, you know? But, you know, I do like that as an adult, we can look at someone, you know, maybe dressing more provocatively as the a way of them taking control of their body and wanting to be more sexually empowered. But again, you're right, we have to have this conversation.
Yeah, and I think that's really just what it comes down to. Like, there's no one way to perceive any of the things we talk about on the show. It's just the conversations that we have to have in order to move forward and make sure that we don't have mistakes like this being continuously made for the next 6 decades. And I think that that's what's important to keep our minds on as we do all of this work. All right, let's see. Where should we go next? Yeah, again, like as far as like what Olivia Newton-John had said, I even pulled the quote here. She herself was quoted as saying, "I know there were some criticisms about me wanting to change to be like him. It's a movie and it's a fun story, and I have never taken that too seriously." And again, I think as adults, we all have the conviction to say that we don't have to take it too seriously. But if you're watching this with kids, and if you're watching this with folks who maybe don't have a grasp on that understanding, then we do still have to have these conversations. We can't just leave folks out because we want to have fun.
Yeah, agreed.
Let's see what else. Oh, there is also a part in the scene there's like a dance contest that they're all a part of at the school. And again, I don't think that this should be a surprise to anyone based on when the movie came out and when the movie was set. But there is also, it's worth noting, a scene where all couples, it's stated that all couples must be boy-girl during the dance. So just some blatant homophobia, which again, unsurprising, has to be noted though.
Yes, it does have to be noted.
Yep, and I believe that comes right before the host also flirts with Marty. So he overall, I think, is just deemed a very inappropriate character and someone who probably shouldn't be working with kids. So overall, I think my biggest takeaway from this movie is that we perceive things based on, I think, A, the first time that you're exposed to it. I know the first time that I watched this movie shaped a lot about my emotions that are kind of wrapped up in it, the nostalgia of it, just kind of that like childhood glow that I think a lot of these things have around them, where it's like, yeah, but it's Greece. And we kind of give ourselves permission to make excuses. But I am going to ask you to kind of go beyond that and be willing to criticize the things that you love and the things that you were raised on. This movie has a lot of great to it. Like I said, watching Rizzo sing "There Are Worse Things I Could Do" and be both vulnerable and really strong. I mean, the quote in that song is like, "There are worse things I could do than go with a boy or two, but the worst thing I could do is to cry in front of you." So like the whole point of the song is like, I know that these people are slut shaming me. I'm in on it. Like, it's not going above her. She understands that she is kind of reinforcing those stereotypes even by, actually sleeping around with some of these high schoolers. But she doesn't care. She owns that. She owns the fact that she is that person, and that the only thing that she could do that would give that power to the people that don't like her is to be vulnerable in front of them, which I, even as a kid, recognize as being like a really powerful moment for her.
Yeah, I definitely love her character. I agree with you on the fact that you know, these films have this, what did you say, this like nostalgic glow around them. And it's not like we have to take all like the movies we've talked about on this podcast and be like, oh, they're off the list forever. But it's about the conversation.
Exactly.
It's about not giving hall passes to things that aren't okay. It's about talking about them while still, you know, generally you can still enjoy the film, but having the conversation about certain problematic things is, I think, what the most important thing is.
Yeah, absolutely. And even if you love Danny Zuko and he is kind of like the person that you've always idealized, he's your hunk. I think that we can even share empathy to Danny Zuko's character when we, like, if we look at the whole scope and we see the system of masculinity that he's also being forced to fit into. Mm-hmm. Granted, I'm not team Danny Zuko, but I do see where we can get that. You know, he is in this system where he also feels like he has to fit into this box.
Yeah.
And he also feels that he has to change his persona. So like, even if that is kind of the hill that you want to stand on, I think that that's more than okay, as long as you're having these conversations, and you're reaching that point with the full picture in mind.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So all of that being said, I think where I would like to go next is just going to be with our conversation starters moving forward. So just kind of an overall wrap up of the vibe of the movie. And then we'll just kind of both go through and talk about the things that we wish you would talk about moving forward. And I will go ahead and kick us off. So obviously I said the most important conversation to have is the fact that we can both love the movies that we've loved for our entire lives while criticizing them. I would also say, please have conversations with the young folks in your life about these gender stereotypes that are perfectly depicted in this movie for conversation. I mean, we've got the Meryl and Jackie conflict that I talked about that you can see. And I mean, I would almost bet you every movie that was depicting teenage girls up until the late 90s, they all are, they're posed against each other so that we can really see like the way that women interact with each other, the way that women are pinned against each other to try to fit into these boxes. Because there's really no other reason that that Sandy and Rizzo would have had a conflict in this movie, if not that they're just not meant to like each other. We're different people. So have those conversations about gender, have those conversations about stereotypes. I would also recommend having those conversations again about the non-consensual scenes. There's very easy ways to start those conversations young. So if you do have a kid that maybe even is too young to watch Grease, but that you think that you need to start having those conversations with, there are resources out there starting at before children can even talk, about how to talk to them about what is good touch, safe touch, and then what is unsafe touch. And I think that this is even a great example for kids around the age of like 10 or 12 to kind of start to see it in action and to be like, did you notice that? How did that make you feel? I think that's a really important question. And then also just letting any and all children know that that is absolutely never okay. Is a great place to start. I think that you can use this movie to start good conversations as well. Like I said, Miss Murdoch, the shop teacher, I think she's a great example. I think Frenchie's a great example of like women who have careers that maybe vary from the norm, or just women who think about more than boys and clothes and riding around in cars, which is a lot of what the movie gives us. And those are my major takeaways. Melanie?
Thank you. Took away all the takeaways.
I've been doing this a while.
It's okay. So no, I'd have to agree with you on all of those. And then I would just like, you know, reemphasize that, you know, the beginning you were talking about teen dating violence awareness month. So, you know, when you look at this film, like identify what relationships are healthy, what aspects of relationships are not healthy, and have that conversation with whoever you're watching with.
Yeah, absolutely. You bring up a great point too. There is one major indicator of dating violence that I think we can really look to in this movie. And that is the fact that Danny embarrasses Sandy in front of all of their peers a couple of times in the movie. It makes it seem like she's not being truthful about their experience, makes it seem like he kind of even slut shames her a little bit.
A lot of gaslighting.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think that that's a great point. You can use those indicators to bring up conversations about how if you're in a relationship, they should never make you feel that way. They should never do that to you in front of other people. So yeah, that was a great point.
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty, folks, as per usual, you know the point of this podcast is absolutely never to tell you not to watch that movie again. We are hoping that you will watch Grease again, hopefully soon, with all of these conversations in mind. And we hope that you'll even take the time to start a few of these conversations. And as per usual, if you have any questions or comments about this episode, or if you have any suggestions for movies or TV shows we should cover in the future, please find us on social media at The Epic Echo, or you can find us on our website at epicwv.org/epic-echo. Thank you so much for being here with us today, Melanie. This was a blast. Thank you for bringing Grease to the podcast. This was a great suggestion.
Thanks, Nora.
All right, everybody, take care, and we will have more episodes for you soon. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of The Epic Echo. To suggest topic ideas, guest recommendations, or even just to ask questions you'd like us to answer on air, please find us on social media at The Epic Echo Podcast or on our website at epicwv.org/epic-echo.